जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, गोपी जन बल्लभ गिरिवारधारी, गोपी जन बल्लभ गिरिवारधारी, यशोदा नंदन व्रज जन रंजनाय, यशोदा नंदन व्रज जन रंजनाय, यमुना तीरावनचारी, यमुना तीरावनचारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस भवराज गतेर सतेर सति श्री श्रीमन डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी महाराज श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय, ISKCON founder acharya श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय, समवेद भक्तवृंद की जय, गौर प्रेमानंद. All glories to simple devotees, all glories to simple devotees, all glories to simple devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Garanga. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vasana Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Dinamani Namasi Sars. Pashkata Deshitarane. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading today from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 24, Text 35. Okay. Let me start with Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Maya Proktam Hilokasha. Pramanam Sachilaukikae. Atajani Maya Tubhyam. Yadavocham Ritam Mune. Maya Proktam Hilokasha. Brahmanam sachalautikike. Ajani maya tu. Ajani maya tubhyam. Yadavochamritam mune. Maya proktam hilokasha. Brahmanam sachalautikike. Atajani maya tubhyam. Yadavocham ritam mune. Others. Vaishnavis. Maya proktam hilokasya. Pramanam satchalokike. Katajani maya tubhyam. Adavocham ritam mune. Proktam ilokasya. Pramanam satchalokike. Katajani maya tubhyam. Yadavocham ritam. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, Maya, by me, proktam, spoken, he, in fact, lokasha, for the people, pramanam, authority, satya, spoken in scripture, lokike, and an ordinary speech, ata, therefore, ajani, there was birth, maya, by me, tubhyam, to you, yet, that which, avocham, I said, vritam, true, mune, was sage. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. The Personality of Godhead, Kapila, said, whatever I speak, whether directly or in the scriptures, is authoritative in all respects for the people of the world. O Muni, because I told you before that I would come as your son, I have descended to fulfill this truth. Purport. Kardapa Muni was to leave his family life to completely engage in the service of the Lord. But since he knew that the Lord himself, as Kapiladeva, had taken birth in his home as his own son, why was he preparing to leave home to search out self-realization or God-realization? God himself was present in his home. Why should he leave home? Such a question may certainly arise, but here it is said that whatever is spoken in the Vedas and whatever is practiced in accordance with the injunctions of the Vedas is to be accepted as authoritative in society. Vedic authority says that a householder must leave home after his 50th year. Pancho Surdvam Vanam Vrajet. One must leave his family life and enter the forest after the age of 50. This is an authoritative statement of the Vedas based on the division of social life into four departments' activities, brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas. Kardapa Muni practiced yoga very rigidly as a brahmacharya before his marriage, and he became so powerful and attained so much mystic power that his father, Brahma, ordered him to marry and beget children as a householder. Kardama did that also. He begot 9 good daughters and 1 son, Kapila Muni. And thus his householder duty was also performed nicely, and now his duty was to leave. Even though he had the Supreme Personality of Godhead as his son, he had to respect the authority of the Vedas. This is a very important lesson. Even if one has God in his home as his son, one should still follow the Vedic injunctions. It is stated, Mahajan Yena Gata Panta. One should traverse the path which is followed by great personalities. Kardapa Muni's example is very instructive, for in spite of having the Supreme Personality of Godhead as his son, he left home just to obey the authority of the Vedic injunction. Kardapa Muni states here in the main purpose of his leaving home. While traveling all over the world as a mendicant, he would always remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead within his heart, and thereby be freed from all the anxieties of material existence. In this age of Kali Yuga, sannyas is prohibited because persons in this age are all shudras and cannot follow the rules and regulations of sannyas life. It is very commonly found that so-called sannyasis are addicted to nonsense, even to having private relationships with women. This is the abominable situation in this age. Although they dress themselves as sannyasis, they still cannot free themselves from the four principles of sinful life, namely illicit sex life, meat-eating, intoxication, and gambling. Since they are not freed from these four principles, they are cheating the public by posing as swamis. In Kali Yuga, the injunction is that no one should accept sannyas. Of course, there are those who are actually following the rules and regulations must take sannyas. Generally, however, people are unable to accept sannyas life. And therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stressed, Kalo nasteva 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 gatiranyata. In this age, there is no other alternative, no other alternative, no other alternative than to chant the holy name of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. The main purpose of sannyas life is to be in constant companionship with the Supreme Lord, either by thinking of him within the heart or hearing of him through oral reception. In this age, hearing is more important than thinking, because one's thinking may be disturbed by mental agitation. But if one concentrates on hearing, he will be forced to associate with the sound vibration of Krishna. Krishna and the sound vibration Krishna are non-different. So if one loudly vibrates Hare Krishna, he will be able to think of Krishna immediately. This process of chanting is the best process of self-realization in this age. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya preached it so nicely for the benefit of all humanity. Om Gyanati Manandisha Ganajana Salakaya Chaksur Mitamine Tasma Shri Garve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Stavitam Yabha Bhutale Swayam Yupa Kadami Dhammadate Swapadante Kam Jai Vanchako Patrubhischa Kripa Sindhubi Vicha Patitano Pavanebhyo Vaishvayu Namo Namaha. So this is a very interesting purport that Srila Prabhupada writes, because we see in here a progression that's very interesting, I think, if we followed along from the Vedic rules and how those must be followed to actually explaining bhakti, the process of bhakti and the process of chanting the holy names as being superior to the process of following Vedic injunctions. I'm going to go through this, and I think this is more or less in the way that I saw Srila Prabhupada following this chain of thought through. First, he explains why Kardamuni when he left home, despite the fact that the Supreme Personality of Godhead was born to him as his son. Secondly, why the following of those injunctions, taking sannyas, was important in setting an example. Then Prabhupada talks, kind of shifts it, and says, no one in Kali Yuga should take sannyas because no one is qualified. Then we kind of get into the idea that there are two types of injunctions, those concerning dharma and those concerning Sanatana Dharma. Prabhupada doesn't say that specifically, but that's more or less where he's going with this. Bhagavad Dharma is superior to the Vedic injunctions, and of those different processes of Bhagavad Dharma or Sanatana Dharma, Prabhupada says that chanting is the most important process. And then he ends with a kind of an interesting point, I thought, about thinking and hearing, which we'll talk about. So first of all, this question came up several times during class over the last few weeks about why would Kardama Muni renounce his home, leave his home, take sannyas when the Supreme Personality of Godhead was born to him as a son? One might think, well, if Krishna is born to you as a son, that's like your perfection of life. He's all of his meditating, all that, is to find God. Well, God is right there in front of him. And the answer to that is very simply that he was following the Vedic injunctions. He was trying to set example of following the Vedic rules that after a certain time of life, one should renounce household life, grihastha life, and enter into the sannyas ashram, or the renounced order of life. And further, it's also mentioned that because he was such a great yogi, he had such control of the mind, he was able to actually meditate solidly 24 hours a day on Krishna within his heart. And so he was never separated from Krishna. He was always with Krishna, even though he physically left him when he was born. Now, it's kind of interesting because a second reason is given by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his purport to this verse. He says, Vishwanath says, Kardama Muni contemplated in his mind, I have been fixed in my Lord Narayan since birth as a servant. Now, with the birth of a son, it'll be hard to avoid having fatherly affection for the Lord. But the simultaneous mixture of dasha and vatsalya is not suitable. However, the independent Lord sinking me in the ocean of lamentation will quickly have me renounce. Why should I not immediately renounce? So that's actually was the last verse. It was Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. So another, and I thought about that also myself, that it's a quite different relationship, isn't it? having Krishna as a son. We see Kardama Muni being, you know, very much in a state of meditation. It looks like that he is really more worshiping Narayan, worshiping Vishnu, and of course it's very fixed in that particular yogic process, process of knowledge and like that. And that's a very different mood to have Krishna as your son. I was thinking about that. Contrast this with something like Nanda Maharaj. Could you imagine Nanda Maharaj? Krishna is born to him after so many years, right? They were almost middle-aged, similar, right? We don't know how old Nanda is, I don't think, but we know he was older. He and Yashoda describes elderly, and they waited many years to have a child. 90? Okay, I'll accept that. Anyway, they were older. So why didn't he just renounce? Could you imagine that? Nanda Maharaj would probably rather die than leave Krishna, you know. I mean, he would, no doubt about it, because that's his rasa. He has a relationship. This vatsalya rasa is so deep and so profound and so wonderful. You know, that Nanda and Yashoda, their whole entire life is just, you know, how do I take care of our young boy? How do we protect him? How do we keep him out of trouble? Well, it's very different than being a servant in a mood of awe and reverence towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Vishwanath is saying that that's really not compatible. It wouldn't really work very well for him to, you know, act as his father. Okay, so there was the injunction of taking sannyas, and that was very important, of course, in Vedic society. And Kardama Muni is giving that example, showing us that even though Krishna is there in his home, for the sake of society, for showing a good example, I should leave home also, enter the renouncer of life, and simply think about, meditate, you know, and serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead in that way. Of course, then Srila Prabhupada states, well, yes, well, this is very nice. We have another Vedic injunction, another statement of Kalo Sudra Sambhava. In this age of Kali, everyone is a Sudra, and therefore no one is qualified to take sannyas. In fact, not only is no one qualified, the injunction is not to take sannyas in this age of Kali. Then, of course, Prabhupada says, if one is actually qualified, then one can take sannyas. That's all right. But there can be so many difficulties. In fact, we had in yesterday's class, Nichikishora gave so many nice examples, right, of problems with sannyasis, even in our scriptures, and issues of falling down. And sometimes he was calling monkey sannyasis, or, you know, so many different issues that have been there, particularly in later years of Kali Yuga, with people in the renounced order of life not really able to continue and take up the vows that are required for that. So we see that even in our movement, Prabhupada gave many devotees sannyas at a very young age, a very early age, and actually many of them were not ready. I'm not making this up to fault find or anything. I actually, Pralhadananda Swami, our sannyas ministry, I was talking to him once, and I asked him about this, and he said that up until recent years, about 50% of all the sannyasis had fallen down. So, I mean, it is very difficult. Many of them were like in their 20s, very young, very new, and then trying to do this very, very difficult service. So you might say, well, why did Prabhupada do this? Because we were a new movement, he needed preachers. We were an army. He had to have those first-line preachers out there. And as we know, in any army, there are going to be casualties. And of course, many were not. We have many wonderful sannyasi preachers and, you know, gurus and, you know, great leaders in our society now. You know, but nevertheless, it's not for everyone. Most of us are not qualified and should just remain happily in our household life or whatever situation we're in, and not really strive for that so much. So another issue is these Vedic injunctions. What Vedic injunctions are we talking about? There's actually, sometimes we talk about Dharma, being these different injunctions or rules and regulations that are followed. But there's what we often talk about as ordinary Dharma, and then there is Sanatan Dharma. Sanatan Dharma refers to the eternal occupation, the eternal reality of the nature of the soul. That is who we really are. And it's not about any particular designations within this body, within this material world. And of course, many of the Vedic injunctions and even the Varnashram injunctions have to do with where you are, you know, in that scheme of things, in terms of Varna and Ashram. But for the devotee, there is really no such distinctions. And those things are secondary to our real duty as pure spirit souls, part and parcel of Krishna and his eternal servitor. You know, so that's really what we are aiming for. Going back to, and this is in today's verse, this was interesting also, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura said, "The worldly principle of taking a wife, stated by Manu and others, is the authoritative statement concerning worldly affairs, laukika. The uncommon, such a principle, however, is to attain me. This is also an authoritative statement for the people uttered by me concerning the highest principle, Bhagavad Dharma." So when I first read that, I thought, well, that's interesting. Now, where did he get this lokika and satya? Well, it's right in the verse, obviously. those were words that were in a verse that we wrote today. And I probably translated them slightly different. I think he said ordinary speech, which Vishwanath translated as worldly affairs, same idea. And then the satya principles, those are uncommon. Those are eternal principles. So the eternal principles are also spoken by Krishna in many places, in many ways. Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, most definitely, Srila Prabhupada says, those are the two scriptures where we're going to find the satya, or the eternal principle, the highest principles of religion and eternal religious dharma. So this is basically saying that Krishna gives different instructions for different time and place, and we know that. We know Bhagavad Gita has several chapters, Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, right? All these different, you know, leading up to, of course, Bhakti Yoga is the highest. And so that's often the progression that we see there. Even in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam and Krishna's instructions to Uddhava, he sort of backtracks and goes through these different ideas of, yoga and sitting postures and all that sort of thing. And then he comes back to you and says, no, but actually devotional service is the real thing. And so, and at one point, Uddhava becomes a little bit bewildered, like, why are you telling me all of these things? He says, well, you know, in other words, Krishna wants to give everything. He's giving here's all the processes, here's all the procedures, here's the different types of yoga, these are there, but you should know that the highest is bhakti. And all of them are meant to lead to bhakti. And the Bhaktisiddhanta Jiva Goswami has a long description of how bhakti compares with other processes. And of course, his conclusion is always that bhakti is the Abhideya. It is the preferred process for this age. And that the other processes are incomplete, and they are only of value if they are part of bhakti, they have bhakti included within them. So jnana can be of some value if it is paired with bhakti. In other words, I'm trying to intellectually understand the relationship of matter and spirit so I can understand that I'm a spirit soul in relationship with Krishna. In other words, if it's connected with Krishna, then it has value. Otherwise, most of these practices, you know, are of very little value to the devotees. There's another quote, of course, another verse that is quoted here. It says, the supreme occupation or dharma for all humanity is that by which men can attain to loving devotional service unto the transcendent Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted to completely satisfy the self. So that's that supreme dharma, rather than a temporary dharma. And in his purport to 128, Prabhupada says, real dharma, constitutional position of the living entity, is to serve Krishna. That is real dharma. Krishna also confirms in Bhagavad Gita, Sarvadharmam Pritchaja Mam Ekam Sharanam Braja, Bhagavad Gita 18:66. So Mam Ekam Sharanam Braja, simply unto Krishna surrender. That is real dharma. So of course Prabhupada quotes Bhagavad Gita 18:66 hundreds of times, right, as the final word in spiritual realization, in Krishna's final instructions to Arjuna, to give up all varieties of religion, which means all these other types and paths, and simply focus on him. So, Bhagavad Dharma is also considered superior to Varnashram Dharma. And of course, we have the famous verse by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which was, what is it, Madhya 13, somewhere. Let's see, where am I? Okay. Anyway, basically, the verse, I'm not going to read all the Sanskrit, it's a long verse. The Gopi Bhartu Padakamalayor Das Anadas Anadas. So he quotes this, and this is also found in Rupa Goswami's Pajavali, verse 74. I am not a Brahmin, I'm not a Kshatriya, I am not a Vaishya or Shudra, nor am I a Brahmacharya, householder of Vanaprastha or Sannyas. I identify myself only as the servant of the servant of the servant of the lotus feet of Sri Krishna, the maintainer of the gopis. He is like an ocean of nectar, and he is the cause of universal transcendental bliss. He is always existing with brilliance. So this is the point. The devotee understands that whatever particular situation I'm in that may be useful for my devotional service, and I may have to fulfill the duties and obligations within that particular body that I'm in. And we all have. We all have our different services, and we have our different dharmas that we have to fulfill. Sometimes this gets confusing to devotees. We wonder, well, I have to do all of these things. You know, where's my time for devotional service? But it's not that it's different than devotional service. You know, it's just that there sometimes, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur even talks about this. He talks about like our primary service, which is our hearing and chanting, and this sort of secondary service we all have, which is due to our dharma that we have in our particular body where we find ourselves. Like, for instance, if one is a father and a husband, there isn't any choice except to provide for the family. You know, you don't go take sannyas or go off and say, well, it's a higher duty just to preach Krishna consciousness, you know, and abandon those other duties. No, that's not done. I was reading in Lilamrita, and I just got up to the point where Prabhupada was about ready to take sannyas, and through all the struggles that he had, and he performed so much preaching as a householder, and but his household life just became increasingly more difficult. It became more and more unfavorable. In fact, as he often said, Krishna made it unfavorable so that he would have to become more renounced and dedicate his whole life to the preaching mission of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj. And we were all thankful that that happened, that you know, that Krishna arranged things for him to sort of kind of give up on India in a sense. He was getting no help from anybody. He was actually president. I didn't realize this. When he was president of the Jhansi Temple, he went to Calcutta, and the Bhakti Saranga Maharaj, they actually sort of fired him as the temple president, very gently in kind of a real diplomatic way, but that's what it amounted to. Can you believe that? In other words, they moved Srila Prabhupada. He was a little bit too pushy about preaching all the time, you know. That's what it seemed like anyway. And they said, this one is someone who would just maintain things more nicely. At any rate, we all go through so many issues, and Srila Prabhupada gave us so many great instructions. But it's not like he rushed off to leave his family. I mean, he tried for years and years and years. He could not get his wife very interested. His children were, you know, so, but they were grown. And finally, he realized that he had to make that step, because that was what Krishna wanted him to do to fulfill his mission. And of course, it's not that Varnashram can't be part of devotional service. In fact, Prabhupada often talked about Varnashram, but he often talked about it as Daivi Varnashram. In other words, there's sort of your normal Varnashram that fits into the Karmakanda sections of the Vedas, and then there's Daivi Varnashram, which means everything is organized and utilized to glorify Krishna, for the service of Krishna, so that this society can make spiritual advancement. And that's a little bit different, of course. So the conclusion for the devotees of Krishna is, of course, as Prabhupada often quoted, as I said, Sarvadharmam Parichaja. And a nice purport Prabhupada writes on that verse. Prabhupada says, the Lord has described various kinds of knowledge and processes of religion. Knowledge of the Supreme Brahman, knowledge of the Supersoul, knowledge of the different types of orders and statuses of social life, knowledge of the renounced order of life, knowledge of non-attachment, sense and mind control, meditation, etc. He's describing so many ways, different types of religion, pretty much summarized, you know, all the different types of practices there might be. Now, in summarizing Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that Arjuna should give up all those processes that have been explained to him. He should simply surrender to Krishna. So that's his purport there. One other similar verse, this is in the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. says the great endeavor one undergoes in executing varnashram duties and performing austerity and hearing from the Vedas culminates only in fame and wealth. But by respecting and attentively hearing the recitation of the Lord's qualities, one can remember his lotus feet. So if the conclusion is to simply surrender to Krishna, then, of course, the next question is, how do we do that? What's the process of surrender to Krishna? And, of course, that's answered here in the purport. And especially, how do we surrender considering the difficulties in Kali Yuga? That everything is so difficult. Self-realization is not easy for us who are trapped here in Kali Yuga in these material bodies. So he answers, and he quotes Lord Chaitanya, Kalo Nasteva 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 Gatiranyata Harinam 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 Eva Kevalam. In the sage of Kali, there is no other way, no other way, no other way. And of course, in Vedic verses and aphorisms, if they repeat something three times, that's for emphasis. That means this is very important. In other words, understand this, get it. Three times is the only process for sage of Kali, and three times, Harinama, 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 chanting of the holy name of the Lord. So this process of hearing and chanting is stressed. I think one other interesting point here was Prabhupada talked about thinking and hearing. Because Kardama Muni always thought about Krishna meditation. So why don't we simply follow that? Well, Prabhupada says, for our minds are always disturbed. Meditation is actually very difficult for us, you know, and we even know those we're trying to chant Hare Krishna, when we're chanting our rounds, our minds tend to, you know, wander here and there, and we have to kind of keep pulling it back and, you know, kind of keep fixing ourselves, you know, in hearing the holy name. So Brahma says hearing is better than thinking. It's interesting, isn't it? So hearing Krishna's name is the same as associating with him, because Krishna is non-different than his name. So he says that when we are hearing the name, then we will think of him. I remember Malati was telling me once that when they were in San Francisco, and she asked Prabhupada, she said, what should we think about while we're chanting? And Prabhupada said, don't think, just hear. And I always remember that, because it's actually such good advice. You know, I mean, don't try to think of, you know, all these things, or should I be thinking of this pastime or that? Just hear. Hear the holy name. Absorb yourself in the name of Krishna. And then what happens to our thoughts? They will go towards Krishna. That thinking process naturally will be aligned with Krishna when we're hearing. So, and of course, the hearing comes from hearing and chanting, Shravanam Kirtanam. So, and of course, when we are chanting, we are hearing as well as chanting. So that process is there, and that becomes the basis of this Bhagavad Dharma or Sanatana Dharma or Parom Dharma, as it's been described here. You know, because sometimes there's this idea, I'm trying to say this in a tactful way. Let's see. I have heard sometimes even some leaders in some parts of the world in our movement say that our movement is really based upon the Vedas, you know, and not even necessarily on Srila Prabhupada's instructions. It's based upon the Vedas. And, of course, the guru's instructions should be in line with Vedas. Well, I think it's nonsense. Our movement is based upon Srila Prabhupada's instructions. And that's Bhagavad Dharma. Prabhupada was giving us process of pure devotional service. We may or may not be pure devotees. Certainly I am not. But the process is pure. It is leading us to this process of pure devotional service, Bhagavad Dharma, of actually being connected with Krishna. And the hearing and chanting of his holy name is the way in Kali Yuga, as Prabhupada was stressing here, of becoming purified. So this movement is so important. Anybody who even begins this process in a very special way. I was just thinking, seeing Avi Rama Prabhu here today, I think you got a letter once from Srila Prabhupada where he said something like, all of my devotees are pure devotees. I know he said you were, but didn't he say everyone was? Something like that, yeah. You know, now, are we pure devotees? Are we without faults? Do we have any material desire? Of course. We're not pure devotees in that way. in a sense that we have not accomplished or realized that, but we are performing the process of pure devotional service. The process that we're performing has no fruitive desire, mental desires, you know, desires for yoga, any of those other things. It is purely meant to engage ourselves in the loving devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Radharani, and all of our wonderful, wonderful deities. So in that way, it's a pure process, and we simply stick with it, hearing and chanting diligently, and know that this is really the means to become perfected, to become purified. Okay, I usually talk on and on for quite a while. I stopped a little early today. Questions, comments, thoughts?
Thank you for your lecture. You said Bhagavad Dharma is superior to Varnashram Dharma. And so I'm wondering, why does Prabhupada talk so much about Varnashram? I don't hear him elaborate about Gyan and Hatha Yoga in the same way.
Prabhupada did talk a lot about Varnashram, because Varnashram is a system for the whole world. You know, and Prabhupada always thought big, right? Prabhupada never thought about, okay, I'm going to do something in this little spot of the world. He was thinking worldwide. He was thinking, how will the world become Krishna conscious? You know, and it's not that necessarily that everyone is going to take up this pure path of devotional service. It's not that everyone's going to follow the principles. Everyone's going to be able to do this. But the Varnashram system gives a place for everyone. It gives a way that everyone in society can be connected with that and eventually make some advancement. And they'll be on that path. And in fact, many of our acharyas write about this. And especially I can think of Jiva Goswami and Bhaktivinoda Thakur also, that they basically say that Varnashram is great until you become, you know, until you get the real thing, until you connect yourself with pure devotional service, you know, with the remembering and chanting of Krishna's holy name and pastimes, you know, and really connect oneself, you know, with Krishna directly. In other words, it can be a stepping stone or a way that would lead one to that. And at the same time, create a very, very wonderful society where everything is peaceful, you know, that the people are taken care of, things are done in the proper way, you know. So, I mean, it has very, very important process purposes. I do remember one thing, and I mentioned this before, and as I said, this came from Bhakti Charuswami, and I asked him this question over a period of a few years, three different times, same question, just to make sure I had it right, because he told me this story about the last week of Srila Prabhupada's life, when he was very, you know, very, very ill, close to, and he would call Bhakti Charuswami in occasionally, you know, and talk to him, and he was sort of, and Prabhupada sort of would point these kind of rhetorical questions. He said, like, how will our movement go on? You know, kind of thing. I forget exactly what the lead-in was, but Bhakti Charu Maharaj said, we need to establish Varnashram Dharma, and Prabhupada said to him, no, he says, Varnashram is for the outsiders, not for the devotees. Mm-hmm. Interesting. In other words, it's a way of bringing the whole world into Krishna consciousness or into a society where there can be a progressive path leading to religious, you know, religious duties and people acting properly and gradually making advancement. And especially as people in Varnashram, as they serve the higher classes or the Brahmins or those who are more connected with Krishna consciousness, you know, and more advanced, then they will also make advancement. But in other words, Prabhupada never really meant for it to be set up like the devotees, like we're going to go around here and say, let's see, I think, Pan Govinda, we'll let you be a Brahmin. You kind of, you know, we don't do that. We don't, right? Tamahara, you're clearly a Sudra. No, we don't designate the devotees away, right? Because we know that all of you, all of the devotees, are transcendental to any of those designations, right? Even though it might be a very important thing to set up for society at large. That's my understanding. Others may have other realizations on that.
Thank you.
Go ahead. Please, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. When businesses start, they often start in a garage. The founder will order the parts, assemble the parts, pack the parts. Maybe the wife will do the accounting and help out. But when it becomes a multi-billion dollar business, that no longer works. So ISKCON has evolved. I came in 1969, and it was quite a different experience, as you all would know from hearing histories. And it evolved. The idea of Varnashram came in a dream to Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, and it's not Daivi Varnashram, he said Daiva. Daivi is wrong. Daiva Varnashram. And in 1977, Srila Prabhupada said directly in front of me, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj and Brahmananda Prabhu. He was talking about his impending death. We didn't like to talk about it, but he freely talked about it. It was of no consequence to him. And in that discussion, he said, "Na sojati, na kanjati, I have no any hankering, no lamentation." Then he paused. He said, "No, actually, I have lamentation." Brahmananda Prabhu said, "Because you didn't finish Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada?" Prabhupada said, "No, because I have not established Varnashram. This is my lamentation. 50% of my work is incomplete." So later that day, it was August, before we went to London, we would take him up, and because it was hot, as you can imagine, you think it's hot here in August. You know what Vrindavan can be like in August. It's quite brutal. So in the evening, it cools down, and he has a flat section of his cottage, a roof, flat roof section. We would take him up there and put him on the rope bed, and I would attend. My instruction from Prabhupada was never leave my side day or night. So I would sleep there with him. I would stay there. So I took the opportunity to inquire further, because earlier in 72, he had instructed me in Florida when I was temple president in Miami. I was talking about buying a farm. And he said, "Yes, make Vaikuntha world. Chaturvarnamayam shustam guna karma vibhaga saha." So that was plaguing me since 72, 73. So on the roof that evening, 77, I took the opportunity. I said, "Srila Prabhupada, how will you do it? How will you establish Varnashram?" And that's when he said to me, "I will go to Gita Nagari. I will sit down and I will teach you." He didn't say them. "I will teach you how to live off the land." Right? So for me, that was the Bij Mantra I asked him for, how to establish Varnashram. So back to the example, when a company starts out in a garage, later it becomes a multi-billion dollar company, what happens? You hire a buyer, you hire a production manager, you hire a shipping manager, you hire a marketing director, you hire an executive board, finance, accounts, et cetera, et cetera. You specialize. The wife's not doing the accounts anymore. The founder is not packing the product and shipping anymore. Things specialize. So ISKCON has grown. Specialization is the symptom of an advanced civilization. Just like when I was young, or even before, there was a doctor who went with one bag of tools door to door. Today, there's a specialist for the specialist for the specialist, as you know how it is. Because so-called advancement in medicine, although it's actually retrograde. But so this is one way of looking at Varnashram. Prabhupada at that time was talking about you. He said, "I will teach you how to live off the land." So another time, conjuncting with this point, I was sitting in Prabhupada's room and a devotee was explaining something to Prabhupada. He was very excited and he was saying about some other non-devotees were arguing something. And the devotee was explaining to Prabhupada what they were arguing. And then the devotee said, but we are Vaishnavas, so... And Prabhupada put his finger up and stopped him. He said, we are not Vaishnavas. It is not so easy thing. So to assume that we have transcended Arjuna, Krishna himself, who acted according to his, he was Vaishnava, he was Kshatriya. Of course, Sishupal made a point out of that. We're not sure which way he goes. But Krishna, of course, transcends all rules and regulations. But have we transcended the Pandavas? Hello? We're so transcendental? When Prabhupada said, we are not Vaishnava, we are trying to be Vaishnava, it is not so easy thing. So a necessity is there to specialize. A necessity is also there to separate the varnas. Today we talked about sannyasis falling down. A survey was done by one of my godbrother's sannyasis. He went and talked to 10 or 12 sannyasis who had fallen down. And he inquired very carefully, why? It was a simple, common answer. I was lonely. It wasn't sex. It wasn't money. It was lonely. Why? Because he wasn't engaged in proper sangha with other devotees who were in his same experiential level. And within the ISKCON Society, each one of us here feels some shortage in our life. And don't think you don't. Just be honest, examine yourself. It's always a shortage of sangha. Finding devotees who can commonly understand your position and empathize and care. This is the need of the hour for this society to evolve. The institution is a vehicle, it's a car. We love the car. We keep it clean. We service the car. We're greatly appreciative. But the car is not the destination. That's why we appreciate it. It helps us to achieve the destination. And what is the purpose of this car? To allow a sangha, to create a place of pilgrimage so people can come together and speak about the holy name and speak about Krishna. And if we're not doing that adequately, if we're not finding those devotees to bond with, then you'll feel lonely. Your enthusiasm will be difficult to maintain. You'll have various troubles that will overwhelm you. Troubles are guaranteed. Look at the Pandavas. What is the story of Mahabharata? It's a warning. Hello, when you get a package of medicine, it says warning. Don't let children get this. Don't take too many, etc., etc. Same thing. What is Mahabharata? What is Ramayana? Warning. You're going to suffer. Don't be shocked. But if you have the love of other devotees who are on the path, you will be able to continue to transcend, to remember the lotus feet of the Lord. So there's another level of varnashram. That is specialization, organization. And I could say my interpretation of what Prabhupada said in front of me and directly to me is that I'll give my own phrase. The Krishnas need to go Amish. Amish. Take away the cow slaughter, it's ideal society. Families. Farms, varnashram is not for sannyasis to have organic salad. It's for children. It's for wives. The sannyasis are supposed to be out preaching. Too much closeness. The sannyasis feel lonely. They see the family life. Spoil sannyas. The householders, even the wife sees the sannyasi and she thinks, I'm supposed to be like a sannyasi. Spoils the householder life. Our family life is a train wreck in ISKCON. Our retention of children is a disaster. We can break our wrist patting ourselves on the back for the few devotees, the young ones who continued and continue with great enthusiasm. But they're 1% or 2%. There are thousands that are bitter, that are angry, that have left. Somebody needs to take the pulse and see and face the reality. The human heart, the soul, the jiva, craves love. The love comes from sangha. When your famous letter, you know, Jamuna was, she had felt the brutality. I mean, we knew Jamuna very well. She even lived with us for some time. She felt the brutality of the politics and all the men and the sannyasi and the brahmachari and the ladies together. It was too much because they have different natures. So her and Dina Tarni moved away to Oregon to a sort of a hippie organic farming area. They had a lovely deity worship. They had a cow. They were holding kirtans. The hippies were coming. It was a very nice, sweet environment for these two divine ladies. But some of the god brothers were writing, this is Maya. You need to be back in association. And Jumuna was humble. She was very humble. So she didn't just arrogantly throw it off. She considered, it must be true. So she wrote to Srila Prabhupada this doubt. And everyone knows this famous letter he wrote back. Association is two or 200, but it must be favorable. Compatible, okay? Favorable. What does it mean? Every one of you ask, if something happens to you on the road, who's going to ask where you are? Is there anyone in your life? If there is, hold on to that person. Right? Love is required. That's the goal of bhakti. If you can't cultivate it at this level, what are you doing? And how we treat the other devotees. The Lord is watching every minute. You know that famous picture of Surdas, where he's, is it Surdas or Bilvamangal Thakur, the poster where he's blind, where he's playing the Veena, singing bhajans of Krishna.
That's Surdas.
That's Surdas, yeah. And little Krishna is sitting, he doesn't know.
Yes.
He doesn't know. Krishna is sitting, listening to the sweet words of glorify him. Krishna is a naughty little boy. If you start talking sweet words, he'll come out of his hiding place. Who's talking about me? This is the clever way to catch a naughty boy. He's hiding. Just start talking. Oh, he's such a smart boy. He's so clever. He'll come out. So he's listening to Surdas. Krishna's watching every one of us because you've called his name. You've called him. He's coming to you. But he's watching also. If you treat others like this, how will he treat me? I'm more delicate. I'm so delicate. I only know love. I don't know this harshness. Even he kills the demons, he's giving them love by liberating them. He's making them glorious. He's making them eternally famous. Putana, Trinavarta, all of them, they all became eternally famous and liberated. So it's about love. And Varnashram is about organizing. It's the organizing family life. Organizing how we eat. So here's the problem. Why I'm saying Krishnas need to go Amish. Why Prabhupada wanted to teach us how to live off the land. Because we bond together heavily by our economic system. By how we derive food and shelter. And if you're deriving food and shelter by working at some corporation, you're being disconnected. This cannot continue. And the children will leave, and they are leaving. More than 80% are gone. So we keep bringing people in the front door, and they're all going out the back door because there's an insufficient social structure which is bonded together with economics, common economics. That's living off the land. That's what that means.
All right.
So these are a few comments.
Thank you very much, Ru. I was thinking when I saw you today, it'd be nice if you would be able to give a class, but I guess you had the opportunity there.
I'm an old man.
I want to make a couple
of... Careful to give me a microphone. Old men just keep talking.
I'm like that to you. You know, anyway, very, very wonderful comments. And I think I spoke a little maybe too off the cuff about Varnashram. Yes, it obviously has a real purpose. And whatever you call it, I mean, sometimes I just think about, you know, like self-sufficient rural living. I mean, I think that's wonderful. I'm all for it, you know, 100%. because it is Varnashram in a sense. I mean, you know, there's different, but there are different elements of it. But I was thinking it's very important what you were talking about as far as our relationships with one another, how we treat one another. And I observed, as you have over the last 50 years, so many difficulties. And I've been very close to the problem. I worked with, you know, child protection for over 20 years and back into it again now. And the Grihastha Division team, trying to counsel families and couples and like that. And recently I've been involved with the Save a Care program here of Community of Devotee Care, where we try to really emphasize this on actually having this personal care for one another and helping those devotees that are in need, and also providing the Sangha and providing education and providing so many things. My take on it is I think things have gotten a little better, particularly in a community like Alachua, where we have a fairly high consciousness and senior devotees who have seen this happening for so many years. So I have seen some improvement, and which to me is encouraging. I think there's more sense of, you know, we're all devotees together, we need to help one another, we need to have that strong Sangha that you were talking about. And I think you're absolutely right. And I had noted that years ago about sannyasis leaving, and I'd heard a few of them say that themselves, you know, that it often was. They felt isolated by themselves, lonely, and they didn't want that life. They didn't want to be like that, where it didn't have to be. You know, that's the other thing. Every social or, you know, every group, whether you're sannyasis, households, or whatever, you can have that Sangha amongst, you know, amongst that group, and it can be very, very strong. So anyway, those are some wonderful points you raised. I really appreciate that. A couple of we got questions everywhere, so don't, or comments.
Thank you very much. Very exciting topics. I just would like to share an experience I had after our Srimad Bhagavatam class, very mystical. It was on Varnashram, and it was right around that time, was it 2000 or 1999, when they thought everything was going to crash and, you know, everything was going to go offline. I can't remember when that was exactly. And I just went and did our rounds around what we called Govardhan Hill, where Jagannath was, and all of a sudden there was a picnic table, which I'd never remembered seeing, and there's a guy sitting on it reading a newspaper with a beanie on his head. And he stopped me and he said, "You must live off the land. Everything is going to end here. You must live off the land." And it was very odd. And I went around again, the picnic table, I didn't see it, and he wasn't there. So it has been my whole goal my whole life, but it never happened. I couldn't find the people who were interested. And we live in Fort Myers. We bought a house here just to commute to get association, but I always thought it was going to happen there. I mean, Ford and Edison would come from Michigan just to stay there because the aesthetics there are so nice, and it just feels like Vrindavan right where we are. It just feels like a little Vrindavan. So I was hoping maybe people would come there and do something, but because there's no temple or anything, it was hard to get somebody. But I really feel pulled, and I was been watching the Amish and all their ways of, and I kept feeling this is kind of what Prabhupada wants, this simple living and very religious high thinking and their way of doing things, you know.
Thank you very much. One thing that I've seen also over the years is being successful at farm communities is not easy. There have been a few that have been successful and there have been a few that have failed. I think part of it is many of us theoretically love the idea of farming and back to nature and all that. I mean, but to actually get out and do farm work, it's not always so easy, you know, because, you know, we are products of this culture and this civilization. And so sometimes it's not so easy. And even just the economic situation, the conditions, we've had problems with really trying to manage cow protection. It's not so easy, although we should have complete faith in that Srila Prabhupada wanted it and gave us instruction that it can be done. Yeah. And then
I was contemplating on that verse, that 4.13 Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talked about Varnashram, Chaturvarna Maya system, that we are born with a Varna, not Ashram. Mm-hmm. Varna is a psychophysical nature that Arjuna is born, and Krishna told Arjuna, nobody can destroy it. You have to go through experience. Whether you like or you don't like doesn't matter. This is 18.60 Bhagavad Gita. So what I understand, you can correct me, Varna is that Varnashram system provides my material needs uncomplicated way according to my psychophysical nature. Mm-hmm. So there has to be a mentor or guru or whoever that can help me to do that. Ashram is a time-sensitive commitment. Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanapa, these are ashram. These are not born with, but it is provided by the teacher or guru. So, yes, even in last so many years I'm in the movement, I see that Alachpa is much more advanced than what I had experienced in early life, even in Mayapur or San Diego. Yeah, we are progressing towards that because a lot of devotees are talking. I don't think we are hopeless. It's progressing. I see that devotees are reforming and they're giving importance to their spiritual life and their material needs also side by side. And it's coming along. And I think it will progress further. Also, there are a few verses like Mahaprabhu says, if you are very good in Varnashram but not focus on Bhagavad Vidhi or Vaishnav Dharma, you will still go to hell to suffer. Mm-hmm. So that scares also. It's not only Varnashram, it is Bhagavad Vidhi, more important Vaishnav Dharma. But Varnashram accommodate my material needs, otherwise it takes me away.
Gangarayan in the back.
I was going to make a different comment that I'm making now, but hearing from the devotees have brought a more important comment, I would think. It's just a very simple comment, is that we all have a lot of mental problems. Usually people who join movements and things like that have some particular need to fulfill. And many of us of the older devotees came from a society that was breaking apart at that particular time with the war in Vietnam, rejecting our families, living in hippie communes or groups of hippies, taking drugs and various things like that. So because we have these mental problems, it's not the easiest thing to develop friendships with devotees. And that's why I was I changed my comment when Prabhu made all these different comments that we need to somehow or other cleanse our mental problems if we want to get together and have loving relationships with each other, because there's a lot of obstacles to that because of our conditioning and mental problems. That's my comment.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Good points, yeah. Anyone else? We're at about 9 o'clock, maybe one more. CTT, we give you the final moment on the floor.
That's what I live for. Yeah, I mean, all these things are really important and they're very sophisticated, and it's tough trying to institute them with about 2, 3, or even 100 sound bites. I mean, they're really sophisticated. And Prabhupada came here and started all this, he had profound levels of realization. I mean, he also read books and this and that. So at a certain point, I do recall he also said, you know, we've expanded and now we have to churn it. So we really do, this is a Brahminical institution, and we really, you know, a lot of this comes from life experience. I mean, Varna, in one sense, is, well, to boil it down to a soundbite, is people's proclivities, their psychological proclivities, their, you know, and it's not that hard. Well, this person's inclined this way, but they're not that Varna. It's just something they're doing now, and this is how we facilitate engagement. And it ain't forced upon us. We carry these desires with us from one life to the next. And Varna can change. There are examples of that. It's really an external thing. But it's a big conversation, and it's good to churn it, because otherwise we ain't gonna consider it. And as you said, it is important, and it's something Prabhupada certainly wanted.
Okay, thank you. Jai, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.